This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Saturday, April 12th, 2014. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Richard Pollock filling in as host for Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, and Timmy Debenham. We have a great show for you today. We're going to be breaking down the Jets by grade for the first half an hour of the show. We're going to grade the forwards, the defense, the goaltending, coaches, and management are all going to get a grade from all three of us here in studio. And then after that, we're doing our playoff preview show. As we do each and every year, we're going to go series by series, and we realize that some of these series don't yet have set matchups, but we will ensure that we talk about the possibility of other matchups. At 9:30, we're going to be joined by Kevin Allen of USA Today to break down the Eastern Conference playoff matchups. And at 11 o'clock, the top of the third hour, we're going to be speaking to Eric DeHatchick, as we always do for our season preview show and our playoff preview show, to break down the Western Conference. The matchups are almost set, but boy, it's looking like there are going to be some incredible head-to-head battles in the first round of the NHL playoffs. Good morning, Izzy.
Yeah, good morning, boys. Good morning, Richie. Good morning, Dave. This is my favorite show always. We've had Eric DeHatchick and Kevin Allen for, is this the fourth year?
I believe so.
The fourth year. We always have them on. They're always really nice and always join us for our playoff preview show a couple days early. We're still going to do our playoff preview show when the playoffs start at the Free Press Cafe. This is always the most fun to do because there's so many good matchups. And sure, we know the 16 teams that are going to be in the playoffs, but we don't know the matchups specifically. We're pretty sure what they're going to be, but you're right, Richie. Some of these matchups, Philly Rangers is a matchup, I think, of the late 90s, going back to the Philly Rangers, the Legion of Doom, and there's also other good matchups, Montreal, Tampa Bay, there's tons. Chicago and St. Louis, if they end up playing in the first round, wouldn't that be incredible?
Which seems likely.
So there's so much to talk about, and we're only 5 days away from the playoffs. It's first round of the playoffs. It really is the best time of year in sports for me.
And we also had a end of the season Jets game last night in Calgary. It was a lot of fun in Cowtown. Fans were giving it to each other back and forth. Lots of Jets fans, lots of Flame fans. It's always funny when you're hearing the chants, and you hear, for whatever reason, whenever I hear a chant on television, you always think, go Jets, go. Even if it's like, go Flames, go. But there was a lot of, it was a fun atmosphere. I mean, obviously the game meant nothing, but Michael Hutchins picked up his second career NHL win. So fans are talking.
Except for the Vezina, I heard.
But honestly, though, Richie, the game means nothing in the grand scheme of things. But what it does mean is they finished the season strong. And I know, and I don't want to get into this because I know we're doing our grades here, Richie.
Yeah.
But, you know, some fans were hoping they'd tank and maybe get a spot. I thought that's pretty ridiculous. You look at some other teams that were winning yesterday that they don't have anything to play for besides pride. But it's nice
to see. Management might want to tank. Players never want to tank.
Exactly.
They want to play to win.
So the teams aren't going to tank, right? So they want to finish strong. So it's nice to see them win two games. And it's nice to see a guy like Hutchinson get a couple of wins here at the end of the year, but at the end of the day, they didn't make the playoffs, yeah. And that's up to management to make sure that they have a better chance next year, and they put themselves in a position that they're back into the playoffs next year.
Yeah, and that goes on to management. We'll talk about that. Let's talk about grades, and let's talk about the forwards first. The forwards collectively. What grade, Ezzy, do you give the Winnipeg Jets forwards in the 2013-2014 season?
Well, I think we touched on it a little bit on Wednesday's midweek show. I think this year you had a lot of positive things happening as far as the forward group goes. You can start with a guy like Blake Wheeler, who won the Three Stars Award at home against in the Boston game. Blake Wheeler, really, for me, not only did he have his career year points totals-wise, but he really took on a leadership role, and he even talked about that. He's had a kid in the last couple of years, and so I think when you start with the Jets, there's Blake Wheeler, who I think had a great year, and that top line really I thought was really good. Now when you go line by line, to me where the drop off is right after that first line. I think when Mark Scheifele went down, that second line was not the same. And when Evander Kane and Blake Wheeler were flanking Mark Scheifele on that second line, I think that was the strongest second line they've had, I think, since the Jets came back. And when Scheifele went down, it was really, as I mentioned, it was tough for him to be replaced, whether it was Olli Jokinen or whoever it was. It was mainly Olli Jokinen. But for me, there were a lot of positive things, and then there were also a few players that disappointed me. Devin Setoguchi, we talked about him, a player who unfortunately had to take a leave of absence, but a guy who just didn't perform, and he was acquired for a second-round pick to supply secondary scoring. So to me, Setoguchi and Kane on that second line, Kane, even though he did work with Scheifele, and I think that next year those are two guys that should play together, but Evander Kane's another guy that, sure, he had the injury problems, but even with the injury problems, he went through big-time goal-scoring droughts in the second half of the season. So I start with those two lines, and I'm pretty happy. I'm very happy with the first line, and the second line I'm a little iffy. Now, I'll get to the grade here. For
like
me,
the teacher who writes a rigged report on the back of the exam and telling you what to do.
For me, the third and fourth lines were a big concern, and a guy like Jim Slater, who missed half of the year on the fourth line, that really affected the fourth line, because going back to when Claude Noel was still the coach of the Jets and continuing with Paul Maurice, they didn't play the fourth line a lot. You look at the Boston Bruins coming through here the other night with Danny Paillet, Gregory Campbell, and Sean Thornton. That fourth line plays a lot. The Boston Bruins roll their fourth lines. They have confidence.
Those guys are way better than the Jets fourth line.
They have confidence in their fourth line. So for me, the fourth line was an issue this year and really struggled, even though last night we saw some positive things with Cormier and Peluso and Klingberg there. But third line as well. I know that wasn't the fourth line for most of the year,
but the
third line as well had issues. And you had Setoguchi on there. You had Byfuglien on there. When Byfuglien moved from defense to forward, that was a line too that never had any consistency. From night to night, it was a mishmash of players. So to me, the bottom lines were a big issue. I'm going to give the forwards a grade of a B. And that's kind of middle of the road, a little bit higher than middle of the road. But for me, guys like Blake Wheeler and Brian Little, they were very consistent. Mark Scheifele's development has to be thrown in there. They finally filled the second-line center role. I think we'd all agree Scheifele is probably the future first-line center, but for the time being, he's the second-line center. But the bottom six secondary scoring, to me, maybe drops that grade down from a B-plus to a B.
Dave?
You know what? The Jets did all right in terms of goal scoring this year. They finished seventh in the Western Conference, significantly higher actually than the eighth, who I think was Phoenix. So they were actually just below that kind of next group in terms of goal scoring. So they were able to put some goals into the net, which is never a bad thing, obviously. And as pretty much, you know, he hit it. The fact of the matter is that the third and fourth lines were real big drop-offs, even though when, you know, Coach Maurice came in and had the advantage of using Buff on that third line, we saw a little bit more of a spread out third line and more even scoring with, you know, as opposed to previously when we had more of a dominant first line, you know, a decent second line and kind of like just a mishmash on the third and fourth. So there was definitely a little bit more balance this season than we've seen before, especially because, you know, Buff was able to put up 20 goals, you know, in defense and as a forward. But I'd probably give the team a B minus. I thought that, you know, you had guys like Wheeler stepped up their game, and you had Little who was, I mean, Little was just consistent. I mean, Little to me is like Wheeler was the MVP because I think he was the best player, but I think Little just showed that, like, a level of consistency wasn't exciting. But I mean, his, you know, what sums up Brian Little and his kind of his hockey smarts was the pass he made to Evander Kane yesterday. I mean, he's breaking into the zone. Most guys would take the puck, maybe flip a backhand on the net and just hope that there's a rebound that one of the wingers can get. But instead, he brings the defenseman with him, and he just very quickly drops it to Kane, who fires a shot very similar to the goal Kane scored in Winnipeg against Boston. And Little just has a decent, very pretty good hockey IQ. You can just see he kind of sees it. He's able to make those passes. So I really like the way Little played, and I thought he brought up their game. I thought Ladd did what Ladd usually does, which is brings a solid effort. He's not spectacular, but he's not, you know, he does what he does, and he's the captain, and he plays that game. So there's really definitely some positives. And then, you know, again, like I said, the third and fourth lines were a mishmash and weren't relied upon. And so if you looked at it overall, I would say B minus.
I'll give you my quick grade. I think so we have a B from Ezzy, a B minus from Dave. I have a B for the forwards as well because, and I want to get to the defense here, but because I think the team performed fairly well for the talent that was on the roster. That's how I look at it. You mentioned Wheeler. You mentioned Little. Ladd, you know, Wheeler, I think, being the best forward. Little having a very solid year, very, very good year. Ladd being, you know, productive. Scheifele taking another step. All those things. But the other guys on the roster, some of the second, third line guys, we know Kane wasn't great. Setoguchi was a bust. Frolik was really solid. But the thing is this. A lot of the guys on the roster didn't really play that poorly for who they are. And that's not their fault that they're not great. That's just not great. When you bring a Matt Hauschek, you know, and you're able to bring the guy in, the expectations for me aren't high. So when he doesn't perform well, I don't blame him. It is what it is. So I have him as a B. A solid performance, nothing spectacular, but some guys took some nice steps forward. Now the defense. This is a difficult one, because I think you can certainly be more critical of the defense, in my opinion. Ezzy, what do you think about the defense, and what is your grade for the Winnipeg Jets defense for the 2013-2014 season?
And I think, Richie, you're right. The defense was a bigger disappointment as compared to the forwards. And you almost have to analyze this decor pre-Bufflin, or I guess with Bufflin and
that's
without
fair.
Bufflin,
that's
right?
Fair. Yeah,
because
fair.
Bufflin really became a forward at about the midway point of the season, just before, unfortunately, Claude Noel was fired. So it definitely got better after Bufflin moved to forward. But I still think you look at the way this defense is constructed, and Grant Clisson was signed to a three-year deal, and he didn't play a lot. So that created a hole, which basically meant Mark Stewart and Jacob Trouba played the second-pairing D role the whole year. And I think Mark Stewart did an admirable job. You know, you guys know how big of a fan I am of Mark Stewart, and he was rewarded with a four-year contract. Oh, he does what he does, lays big body checks, and blocks shots. I think he blocks like 10 shots a game or something like that. But you know, this defense, I think, to me, the biggest disappointment for me, and we'll get to the biggest surprise and the biggest positive, which obviously rhymes with Jacob Trouba, or I guess is Jacob Trouba.
It rhymes with Jacob Trouba.
So you look at the defense, and for me, and again, a guy that I'm a big fan of that I was really disappointed was Bogo. And I know Zach Bogosian had some injury problems here this year towards the end of the season especially, but he's a guy that was given a seven-year contract and was given the title, especially after Dustin Bufflin moved to forward, because the Winnipeg Jets had Toby Enstrom and Dustin Bufflin paired together for basically 2.5 years. And Bufflin was not in shape and could not log those minutes, and they had to break that up.
Still
so that meant that Zach Bogosian was anointed in that first pair D role, and he struggled. Mm-hmm. And he's a guy that has otherworldly talents. He's got lots of talent, and he struggled. And he's had, I know he's had the injury problems and that, but to me, he didn't quite elevate his game to that role, because I think we'd all agree that that's the role that they see Zach Bogosian playing on this team.
That's the role that he has to fill.
Right. And it's not,
close to that role to be worth the money that they're paying him.
Right. It's not a guy that's going to play a lot of power play and they're going to expect 50 points out of him. It's mm-hmm. a shutdown guy that has to be sound defensively in his own zone,
that's right.
finish his checks, and be a leader on this team now. He's been in the league. This is his sixth year. And I think he was a disappointment. And again, that doesn't mean that I don't like his game or I'm not a fan. It's just, for me, he was a disappointment. Now, Toby Enstrom, his offensive totals, I felt, slipped because of the fact he was playing more minutes. He was 31st in the NHL in time on ice, almost 24 minutes mm-hmm. a game. He was playing a lot. And Toby Enstrom is the most talented defenseman on this team, but I think he almost...
Offensively.
And I think he was always... He still has trouble with bigger forwards, and he always will. I think that the fact that he was asked to play bigger minutes and kind of make up for the mistakes of first Dustin Bufflin and then Zach Bogosian really affected his confidence. So for me, that pairing was a disappointment. Now, getting to Mark Stewart and Jacob Trouba, mm-hmm. I think they were an absolute surprise. And really, even though probably going forward, Mark Stewart, you'd like to be a third-pairing defenseman, they played really well together. Jacob Trouba, if he doesn't miss 17 games, I'm pretty sure, maybe, I know Nathan McKinnon's
been
pretty good.
Did you see, no, he's not Nathan McKinnon. Nathan McKinnon.
No, I'm saying.
Nathan McKinnon is unbelievable.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I was saying that.
But did you see that poll by Bob McKenzie about Rookie of the Year candidates? Because that's what you're going to talk about. And not one person mentioned Jacob Trouba in his GM poll.
They had Torrey Krug on there, I imagine.
Everybody except for Trouba. It was very odd.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, the fact that Jacob Trouba, Richie, on certain nights, on many nights, is among the ice time leaders is incredible. Mm-hmm. And we know that, sure, he's had his struggles, and he has to pick his spots when he pinches and all that. But Jacob Trouba, his first year in the NHL, I mean, you got to give the guy an A. The way he played and performed and his decision-making was incredible. And then, you know, you go down the list of other guys. We mentioned Clitson was injured, but Ellerby and Party, really, for most of the year, picked up the slack from some of these other guys that were injured. Paul Postma was injured. So, to me, they did a decent job on that third line. I think a guy like Adam Party, a guy who's a UFA along with Ellerby, neither of those guys might be back. And so maybe only one of those guys
Ellerby's
is back.
An RFA, right?
He might be.
Yeah, I think so.
Both free agents. So,
yeah.
I mean... For me, the defense gets a C. And the reason why the defense gets a C is because even though this team got better defensively as a group, I still think the offensive numbers struggled and took a bit of a hit. And this team still, on certain given nights, have trouble defending. And I think, though, as a group, they're trending in the right direction. But I still think Zach Bogosian, his inability to take over that number one shutdown role, to me, is why the grade's low.
Yeah, Ellerbe is a pending RFA, restricted free agent, and Party is a pending UFA, an unrestricted free agent, meaning anybody can bid on him and get him in the offseason as of early July. David, as he has a C for the Winnipeg Jets defense for this past season, what do you have in that?
Well, you know what, as once again makes a lot of good points, and I you know, it's hard because you, the one thing we saw, I thought, with this team was we saw a lack of depth. I thought we had a little more depth in the defensive system than we did. And when you saw guys like Bogosian go down, and you, I'm not saying the guys didn't step up and play more. Like a guy, as I said, a guy like Mark Stewart starts playing a lot more minutes. You know, he's paired with Trouba. Trouba's, you know, a horse. He's taking like 24 minutes a game. So you're seeing guys play above their kind of pay grade. But I really think we saw what was missing. You know, you're missing that second pairing left shooting defenseman. And really, this team
have been for 3 years.
Of course. But you've been saying that for how long? That's the need that this team has to address this summer, right? Because it's just, or for a while now, but like specifically this summer, because it's just, it's clear that, you know, you can't, you know, look, it's the NHL. We're not talking about a lower league. Right. And teams will isolate that and they'll exploit it. So yes, Mark Stewart has stepped up and played above what he should be playing. That's but right. The reality is, he doesn't need to be playing anything more than a third pairing defensive role.
That's right.
Because that's where he's best. So yes, he's played well in the role he's been asked to play, or admirably, I should say, but at the same time, he's being asked to play above what he should be doing, I think.
Well, so, and as he mentions, the block shots and stuff that you can do in the third pairing and play the penalty kill.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I just think, like, you're watching a guy like that and you're thinking to yourself, wow, he's for what he is, he's really stepped up his game. But at the same time, you know, we saw Bogosian kind of stand pat. He didn't.
I think he regressed.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, no, you're probably right. He probably did regress, but I just think, like, I mean, it's also so hard when you have these injuries. You know, it's interesting to see what a full season of Zach Bogosian would be like. But so I'm going to go with a C as well. I honestly looked at the Jets defense and I thought to myself, like, you know, I was, and again, it's hard, you have so many changes and you have Buff switching from D. I mean, he's still listed on the Jets roster as a defenseman.
He's costing some people some bonuses, I heard.
Really?
He's listed as a D, getting points. So the defense.
Yes, I heard that too. Yeah. So he ended up with like a defense. Yeah, that's right. So it, you know, I would go with the C for the defense because I thought, like, you know, Enstrom again, big drop off in terms of his points and his production and stuff like that. So I think a C is probably a fair grade for the defense.
Remus tells us from the other room that Justin Schultz is getting costing him some money because Dustin Byfuglien, listed as a defenseman, is getting points as a forward, and that's cutting into Schultz's ranking in the National Hockey League overall.
I think that makes him 11th,
not
10th. He
needs to be top 10 in goals,
right,
and Byfuglien's ahead of him.
That's just unfortunate because obviously Byfuglien doesn't factor into his or the coach's plans, right?
If you watch Justin Schultz enough, you wonder why he's listed as defense too. I'm going to quickly give my grade. It's a C as well, guys, for all the reasons you mentioned. These guys didn't take the next step. There's too much talent on this roster. I mean, they need to fill it. They're too top heavy, but their top guys in that top heavy weren't good enough this year. And I think that goes for really all of them, except for Jacob Trouba, as you said. I would give him an A+. I thought he was terrific. Young defenseman in the NHL, playing as many minutes as you mentioned. Just a tremendous season for him. When we come back, goaltending, of course, the lightning rod for Winnipeg Jets fans, coaching and management. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're breaking down our grades for the Winnipeg Jets for the 2013-2014 season. Richard Pollock in studio, joined by David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, Ezra Ginsberg, Michael Remus, and Tim Debenham. We got a full crew on hand breaking down the grades for the Winnipeg Jets. Goaltenders is next. This is obviously something that all fans want to talk about, the goaltending. And I don't know where particularly you guys stand on it, but I'm interested to know exactly what you guys think is the grade for Andre Pavlik, Al Montoya. I guess Michael Hutchinson is in there as well now for the Winnipeg Jets goaltending in the 2013-14 season.
Oh, I was liking that House of Pain that was playing there.
We're actually jumping around.
Yeah, I was getting ready to jump around there. Goaltending. Where do we start with goaltending? And I guess you're right, Richie. We got to start with Andre Pavlik, who was obviously not playing for those last few games there. I think Richie's got a little microphone issue here, so we're going to get Richie. Richie, you're good here?
I'm good.
So when we start with Andre Pavlik, Dave, we have to start with the way he I guess failed to perform here throughout the season, and it brings up issues because Andre Pavlik is under contract for several more years here, and at certain points in the season he lost confidence in himself, and Al Montoya had to come in. I remember especially in January when he had to come in. For me, Andre Pavlik was a significant disappointment this year, and everybody can look at the numbers, and you can look at his pedestrian save percentage, you can look at his pedestrian goals against average, but what it comes down to, and 900 and 3.0 goals against average, but when you factor in that Andre Pavlik had a full season, and he told us, Dave, you were there, Andre Pavlik told the media in the exit interviews last year that he was going to come into camp in better shape and more focused because of the lockout year wasn't the best year for him. And he failed to live up to those expectations, and he didn't play as many games, I think, as they'd like him to play. And based on the contract, I think they'd like him to be up around the 65-70 game range. Maybe not 70, but probably more around that. So he definitely struggled this year. And I thought Al Montoya did a great job as a backup. And I know that maybe Al Montoya doesn't come back this year, but I think he did, you know, his job, and he performed. But to me, you got to give the goaltending a C because of their inability and again, to as a group, to get better. And I think that Andre Pavlik, how many times this year did Andre Pavlik steal games, right? And the good goalies will steal games. And Andre Pavlik, technically, and he makes good saves, he's good. But I think this year he regressed, and you can't deny that. His numbers were worse. And his conditioning, even though it might have been better, I don't think helped him be a better goalie. So I think that raises the question going forward next year. Is he the guy, or do we have to bring someone else? And we've talked about this for the last month.
We'll be talking about that in the spring and the summer.
Right. So the goalies get a C, Richie, for me. Okay. I think, you know, Montoya, I give Montoya a B plus. And Pavlik, for me, gets a D. He was disappointing this year, and he struggled with his confidence and his play. And to me, that's why the grade's lower.
We're giving our grades here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290 for the Winnipeg Jets goaltenders for the 2013-2014 season. The goaltending as a whole is getting a grade. In 5 minutes, we're going to be joined by Kevin Allen of USA Today to preview the Eastern Conference playoffs. But before that, David Minuk.
Well, you know, I'd love to use Michael Hutchinson within my grade evaluation because, you know, he's played very nicely in the last few games. But, I mean, the reality is we can't kind of almost have to exclude the last three with him involved. And I would honestly give this team a D. I mean, they're goaltending a D. I mean, they're second worst in the Western Conference in terms of goals against. I mean, and that's not to say that, you know, that's not also on your defense. But, I mean, it just when this team needed it. Look, Al Montoya was very nice as a backup. But when he was given the opportunity to be the starter, what happened? The play fell off. He didn't, you know, because everybody looked at Al Montoya. They said, they as much as they hated Pavlik, they said, okay, Al Montoya can get the job done. When he's played, you know, when he played in Chicago, he was unbelievable. When he played in certain, you know, whenever he played in certain games as a backup, he was very good and he played well. And look, we talked about it before, you know, like sometimes goalies need that push from behind. And, you know, other times when they get that opportunity, like we saw with Al Montoya when he played, what did he play, like 6 games in a row for the Jets when Pavlik went down? And he struggled. He didn't play, you know, he didn't play as well as he had in that backup role.
You always love the person you don't see a lot of.
Well, that, I mean,
back
exactly.
Quarterback, everything.
Yeah, that's right. Because you always, because there's always the hope that that person is going to be able to do for you what that person who you currently have in that role, Andre Pavlik, isn't. And so the reality is that Andre Pavlik, as he said, I thought he would come into camp in better shape and just was a kind of I just expected different because, you know, he kind of really said that as his goal was to change the focus into his being a more technically sound goaltender. And we just saw...
Which needs work. I mean, you know, physically he has the tools as far as I'm concerned. He does need to technically get better.
Like
in terms of, you know, positioning and some other things that I think he's a little bit sloppy at.
Yeah, that's right. Poppy's a little sloppy. And so the problem is that, like, you know, Andre Pavlik just didn't do what he needed to do this year because they needed him to be the guy. You know, he always talked about wanting starts and needing, you know, wanting to play more. And nobody is ever going to say, especially someone in a starting role, I want to play less. But, like, you just didn't see Pavlik take it to that next level that he needed to. And the team needed him to step up when they, you know, this year. And realistically, like, how far were the Jets out of the playoffs, right? And if Pavlik steals, as he said, if Pavlik is able to steal some of those games for them, maybe they're pushing a little bit harder.
Yeah, I mean, the goaltending didn't have a good season. And I think that's very apparent. And Pavlik would tell you that himself. Andre Pavlik would. In terms of my goaltender ranking, it's kind of between the two of you. I'll give him a, I'll give it a D plus. I think overall you have to deal with the starter. The starter didn't have a great year. And Montoya and Hutchinson's play aside, I think, and Hutchinson obviously three games, whatever it was, but they played all right. But as David mentioned, I think mentioned and made a very good point that, you know, when given the opportunity, didn't look as strong as maybe we thought he looked in small glimpses. So the goaltending gets a D plus as far as I'm concerned. I do think, though, I will say this: the goaltending is such an easy thing to criticize because you look at a couple numbers and you say, oh, he's been terrible.
That's a good point.
You know, his save percentage is 900, 901, whatever it is. He looks terrible. And then that's it.
And we should qualify, Richie, you know, just to cut in here really quickly. And you made this point, I believe it was on the pregame show with Rick Ralph. Andrei Pavlik's save percentage was better after Paul Maurice took over. And the team was better. And that should be noted. He did show signs of improvement. But again, Richie, when you're given that number one title, and he was, because he was given the contract. And I know that people want to say, oh, it shouldn't matter, but on this team, I think it did matter.
Yep.
I think you got to be the better goalie on any given night. And even though Al Montoya, we'd all agree, is not the answer in goal, too many nights, Andrei Pavlik was just average.
And, you know, and he's played really well.
Or
under
below average.
He played really well under Maurice, kind of faded. As you know, the further away you went from January 12th, he didn't play as well. And then obviously, I think there's a confidence issue there, too. But, and we'll talk about the opportunities in terms of goaltending and what the Jets have for options. But we're doing grades today. And I think we had a C, we had a D, and a D+. So, you know, we were pretty close. We've been pretty close on all of our grades so far. I want to do coaching grades. There's going to be two different coaching grades. Or I guess we're going to do one grade, but you have to take into account the Claude Noel time pre-January 12th and the Paul Maurice time post-January 12th. Then there's going to be a management grade. I'm interested to hear what you guys have to say about that. But first, this is our playoff preview show for the most part. Kevin Allen of USA Today is up next to preview the Eastern Conference playoffs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour here on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are talking, first half an hour, we're talking about Winnipeg Jets grades for the 2013-2014 season. But this is our playoff preview show, and we're happy to have Kevin Allen on the line.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Kevin Allen of USA Today joins us this morning to preview the Eastern Conference playoff race, not Eastern Conference playoff matchups, excuse me. Not all the matchups are yet set, but Kevin, we're going to have you on to at least preview the ones that are set and talk about the ones that could be, if that's all right with you.
Absolutely. I'm ready to go.
Habs Lightning is the one series that we know is going to happen. We don't know yet who will be the home ice advantage team, but right now the Lightning passed over the Habs last night, so they look like they have the advantage to be playing at home. Who do you like in this series, and why?
Well, it's funny. Like, maybe 3 weeks ago, I would have said the Lightning. You know, I just didn't have much faith in the Habs. But, you know, the Habs have really showed me sort of down the stretch that, you know, they're a better team than I think I wanted to give them credit for. And I think, you know, the Vanek deal was a good one for them. I thought it was a piece that they really needed. It was a guy, you know, a go-to scorer, a premium blue-chip athlete who could step in and maybe be the difference in a playoff series. And, you know, we all know what Carey Price is capable of. We saw him on the biggest stage of all in Russia. So I'm going to give them a little bit of an edge there. I think the Lightning have come a long way, but I've certainly Bishop's injury, you know, puts a little scare into you. You know, even if you believe he's coming back, you know, where is he going to be? Did he lose his momentum? Plus, I think the Lightning still, to me, have to, you know, play and win those 2-1 playoff games.
Kevin, we all remember how the Montreal Canadiens collapsed against the Ottawa Senators last year. How concerned should Habs fans be about last season's collapse? How concerned are you?
Well, I think that unlike players who say last year was last year and this year is this year, I've always believed there is a carryover effect because, you know, soon, you know, when the media talks about things all the time, as we're apt to do, and when the fans talk about them, and now because of the increase of social media, they're even more front and center than they were in the past. I think it sort of does, you know, have an impact. I think, you know, players start to think, well, boy, you know, we're going to have to deal with the pressure of dealing with that as well. So, you know, I think it's a concern, but again, I think this team's a little bit different, you know, maybe a little bit better than I thought it was going to be. So, I think they're going to be okay. I really do.
Kevin, who would you say is a better matchup for the Penguins, the Red Wings or the Blue Jackets?
You know, it's funny. We've been debating. I think it's the Blue Jackets. I just think you don't want to mess with the Red Wings. And, you know, they are certainly not a perfect team. They're a flawed team. They're, you know, when you watch them defensively, I'm sure Mike Babcock, they drive him crazy because, you know, they gave up too many dangerous scoring chances. You know, they're an exciting, energetic team now. Like, you know, my argument is that the Red Wings have benefited from the 400 man games lost in injury because it forced them to do something they've never done in the past, which is to bring up and look at young players. And I think they were stunned at how talented, you know, their younger group was down in Grand Rapids. And it just so happens that, you know, they're coming off of last year's American Hockey League Championship. So you have some guys who don't have NHL playoff experience, but they have, you know, high level AHL playoff experience. And I think those guys have stepped up and really added sort of a new energy and, more importantly, some raw speed to the Red Wings attack. Like, they went from an average skating team to maybe even below average to a quick team. Like, you had Tatar and Nyquist and Sheahan. Clint Denning is a very fast skater. DeKeyser came in last year. He's a very gifted skater. And suddenly the Red Wings now are quick and dangerous, and, you know, they get a couple of breakaways every year. Still, the bottom line is they're still not any good defensively. They struggle. They give up chances. So I think, you know, you shouldn't be totally afraid of the Red Wings, but if you're the Pittsburgh Penguins, you don't want to deal with the sort of the excitement and the energy that the Red Wings have, and you'd rather deal with the Columbus Blue Jackets, who, you know, are just happy to have made the playoffs, I think, and, you know, are still trying to sort out who they really are. Like, Johansson has stepped up and had a really nice season, but it's really hard to know who the flag carrier is with the Blue Jackets.
We're joined by Kevin Allen of USA Today previewing the Eastern Conference playoffs, which start Wednesday at 6 p.m. Central Time. Kevin, on the Pittsburgh Penguins, as you mentioned, you know, who maybe they'd like to see more, do you think the Penguins, I guess two-part question, do you think the Penguins are deep enough up front and good enough on the back end to make a run all the way to the finals?
Well, I do. I think there are two really good teams in the Eastern Conference. You know, the Boston Bruins, I think, are the best team, and I think they're the best team because they're the best equipped for playoff hockey. Like, they're a team, in my mind, that is designed for playoff hockey. You know, because they have Claude Julien, they have the best defensive-minded coach in the game today, in my opinion. They have a very gritty team. They've got an agitator or two, like Marchand and Thornton. They're very comfortable playing 2-1, 3-2 games. Where the Penguins, I think, are trying to be that team. You know, bringing Jacques Martin last in the off season to sort of be a defensive leader, I think has helped. Like, they've sort of changed their style a little bit. They've tweaked it, and I think they're well aware that they have to play differently. But, you know, when you're going into the playoffs, no matter how well Fleury has played, and he has played well, you know, the question will be is he going to be good in the playoffs? He hasn't been good in the playoffs in a very long time. He's gone four consecutive years sub 900 save percentages, and he's looked lost in the postseason. So they're going to go in dealing with that. I think he's going to be fine. I think working with the sports psychologist has helped him, and he's really looked to me to be a different goalie this season. I watched him the other night, for example, and I can't even remember who was driving on him, and it just drove to the net, and he just looked like he filled the net. And before, last season, even during the regular season, I thought he looked a little loose back there, where it looked like there was a lot to shoot at, and this time I thought there was nothing to shoot at, and I just thought it was sort of a symbol of the way he sort of changed his approach to games, and I think he's just a much more confident. I think their defense is better than it was last season, and, you know, when you look at it, if you believe Letang is going to be playing at his highest level in a short period of time, you know, and then you're looking at Brooks Orpik, and Martin is back now, and, you know, they've got Letang. You know, they've got some younger players. Mata, I think, has been a real pleasant surprise. Mm-hmm. I think he's much more mature than you would expect a player of his age to be. So, you know, I like that team. I don't think they're the Bruins, but I think they're good enough to get to the final if they play at their best.
You know, Kevin, going back to the Bruins, and I really agree with what you said there, they really are a team that's built for a long playoff run. When you look at the Bruins right now, the Detroit Red Wings and Columbus Blue Jackets are tied, and I guess Detroit has the eighth spot right now, so Boston right now matches up against the Red Wings. When you look at those two teams, the Red Wings and the Blue Jackets, who do you think is a better matchup, first-round matchup for the Bruins?
Well, again, I think it's exactly the same as where they get. I think you just want to avoid the Red Wings. You know, I don't think the Bruins are fearful of the Red Wings, and I say that knowing the Red Wings have beaten them 3 out of 4 games this season. But, you know, being the Bruins in the regular season and beating them in the playoffs, I think, are two different animals. And I think the Bruins would just rather deal with the Blue Jackets because they don't present quite the danger level that the Red Wings do. Like, the Red Wings, as I mentioned before, with their sort of embracing the youthful line of Shan and Tatar and having Nyquist around, like they've been scoring 3+ goals a game for you know, the better part of a month. So you'd rather not deal with them. Where I think Columbus's offense is a little less scary, and again, I think getting into the playoffs for them was such a big thing. I think there'll be a bit of a letdown. So I think the Bruins would rather play the Blue Jackets.
Kevin, we've talked about the Bruins' strengths. Do you see this team has any holes?
On the Bruins?
Yeah.
Well, not really. I mean, you know, Seidenberg was a big part of that team last year. He's a good shot blocker, and I think he's another guy that, you know, is just sort of built to be in the playoffs. Like, you know, in the regular season, you say, what a nice little player. But during the playoffs, you watch Seidenberg, you're going, wow, you know. This guy is a force out there. So I think they'll miss him. So now you're playing with younger players. You know, suddenly Hamilton and Krug are playing expanded roles this year in comparison to last year. So, you know, there'll be some sort of adjustment there. But, you know, I still just really like this team quite a bit. Like, you know, their top line now with Krejci and Iginla and
Lucic.
You know, like they got more, almost 500 hits, you know, among them. And, you know, what number one line in the NHL can produce offensively like it can and also punish you with, you know, that number of hits in a season? So, you know, there's just a lot to like about the Bruins, and I think they have plenty. I mean, the only concern going back to the matchup, who they'd rather face, you know, the one strength that Columbus has over, in my opinion, over Detroit is in their goaltending. Like Bobrovsky, you know, he's not Patrick Roy yet, but he's a pretty good goalie, and I think he has the potential to steal a game or two here.
We're joined by Kevin Allen of USA Today, breaking down the Eastern Conference playoffs. We have Kevin on every year to break down the playoffs and the regular season. Does a great job. Rangers and Flyers looks like the matchup, the 2-3 seed in the Atlantic Division, Kevin, or Metropolitan Division, whatever they're calling it now. I have the division names I've never been able to figure out. I think the last time these guys met was 1997, when the number one center for the Philadelphia Flyers was Eric Lindros. The number one center for the New York Rangers was Wayne Gretzky. So it's been quite a while in terms of playoff matchups, and that's what this division, this divisional setup was meant to do. The Rangers kind of play a flow style. The Flyers are a little bit more defensive than they were under Peter Laviolette, but obviously they're an aggressive team with a lot of talent. How do you see this series going?
Well, I mean, obviously the Flyers wanted to play the Penguins. You know, I think they believe they could get inside the Penguins' head. So I think there's probably a little bit of a disappointment for them. You know, the Rangers, in my estimation, have sort of gotten it together more and more as the season progresses, as the season progressed, because they got accustomed to Vigneault's style. And now I think, you know, your description of them I think was perfect. They are pretty much a free-flowing offensive team, and that's sort of allowed them to be, you know, to get Richards back, you know, kind of reignited. So I sort of like the Flyers, though, in this matchup, just because I think, you know, the biggest change that Berube made is that he made this team harder to play against. So I think, you know, they play more Flyer-style hockey than they did under Peter Laviolette. And I think, you know, that really, even though you wouldn't think it would work this way, I think it sort of reignited Giroux and got him going, and now he's playing at a very high level. So even though the Rangers have played pretty well, I like the Flyers. I think their defense has sort of come together a little bit more under Berube than it did last season. They got some depth. I mean, the McDonald trade was a good trade mm-hmm. for them. So I like the Flyers in this.
Kevin, you told us that you like the Flyers, but when it comes to goaltending, there still are question marks. I know out of the three of us, I'm probably the biggest Steve Mason fan, but I know that when it comes to Henrik Lundqvist in New York, there aren't many question marks about him. You know what you're going to get. He's an excellent goaltender. Do you trust Steve Mason in this series?
Well, that's the number one question. You know, he has certainly, you know, reclaimed his career. Like, he really looked like he was down and out and wasn't going to get back. And it was really bizarre, because how could a guy be as dominant as he was in his first season and really just look lost after that? So, you know, I've been impressed, and I think you've got to have some admiration for a guy that's gone in there and sort of reestablished himself as a sort of a big-time goalie. So, but, you know, I mean, we're not going to know until we watch him in the first couple of games. But, you know, there's no question that the Rangers have a goaltending advantage because of who, you know, Lundqvist is. Now, saying all that, you know, it always surprises me when I look up Lundqvist's numbers, because I always list him among the top two goalies in the league. He's a, you know, he's won a world, he's won an Olympic gold medal, and he was a silver medalist, and, you know, we all know he is. But, you know, he's got a losing record in the postseason. So, even though we all know that he's a great goalie and he's not been on great teams there, you know, he doesn't have this aura of invincibility that you would expect for a goalie of his ability.
Kevin, last but not least, who are your two finalists and your cup winner?
Well, I'm really struggling. I'm a Bruins guy all the way from the East, and I thought I sort of had it figured out early in the season that I was going to claim that we were going to have a rematch, because I love the Blackhawks. But, you know, now I just love the way they play, and I just think that, you know, they have all the what you need to win a cup, you know, plus having the knowledge of how to get it done, because they've done it two of the last 4 years. But now when I've watched them, and when you have the concern over where Taves and Kane are going to be, you know, Kane for sure will be back. Taves, we're expecting to be back. But, you know, where are they going to be at? Because they need those guys. That's what makes the Blackhawks special, is they have all that dynamic offensive talent. So, you know, now I'm starting to wonder, you know, what's going to happen. I think the Blues haven't played as well down the stretch as I thought they would. So now, you know, I'm wondering, you know, is there room? Because all those teams in the West are really good.
Mm-hmm.
They really are. So now I'm wondering, is there room for the Sharks, you know, if they get by L.A.? You know, the Kings are another team that's sort of built. I think the West is just more wide open than I thought it was going to be for a variety of factors. But I guess if right now, and I reserve the right to change my mind, but I think I'm going to have the Blues getting the final. I just think this team that Hitchcock has sort of pieced together, you know, is so difficult to play against, and I think they have the ability to play against the tougher teams. And I just think they're going to survive. But, you know, to be honest, whatever happens in the West, nothing's going to surprise me. And I still love what the Blackhawks do. Like, they have the best transition team by mm-hmm. far. Like, nobody can turn a puck the other way quicker than the Blackhawks. They're so much fun to watch. It sort of reminds me of watching, you know, hockey in the 1980s, although, you know, there's no mistakes. You know, what I miss most about hockey from the 1980s was all the mistakes, and we don't have those anymore in the 21st century, not like that. But I still like the way the Blackhawks play.
Great job here by Kevin Allen of USA Today. Kevin, thanks so much, and enjoy the playoffs.
Sounds good. See you later.
Great. You know what? That's interesting preview for how we're going to preview the Eastern Conference, because those matchups leave some interesting discussions to be had. When we come back, though, we're going to finish our grades for the Winnipeg Jets. Coaching, management are getting grades, and then we're going to go through the Eastern Conference playoffs and break down who we think is going to be the victors in the first round. You're listening to Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast,
on TSN1290.ca.
If you're just tuning in, you missed Kevin Allen of USA Today breaking down the Eastern Conference playoffs here on The Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN1290. Richard Pollock joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and David Manouk of IllegalCurve.com. This segment's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest-running independent comedy club in North America. For over 25 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com.
Is Kevin Allen great?
He's just so insightful, and you know, the little things that he points out, you can tell he pays close attention to all the teams on the East Coast. He's based in Detroit, so he, you know, when he was mentioning Detroit, I don't think anybody knows Detroit any better than Kevin Allen does. We were grading the Jets in the first half hour of the show, and we didn't get to coaches and management. So let's do that now. Ezzy, why don't you give me your grades for both, because we're a little up against it here. So give me your grade for coaches and management of this squad.
I know we don't have a lot of time here, but as far as coaches go, I know you could really easily split it into two grades here, but you got to factor in everything, not just the head coach. And I think Paul Maurice has done a great job since he took over. He had the team at 18-12-4, and I think we'd all agree that he deserves to be back next year. I think the coaching staff did struggle a lot earlier on in the season with this team and getting this team to buy in defensively. And Dave pointed it out. This team does score goals. This team can skate and score goals, but this team as a group still struggles. And I think you look at the power play, it hasn't improved. But you look at the penalty kill, it's ninth place in the NHL from bottom 10 in the league. That, to me, is something that hasn't been talked about enough. And a lot of credit goes to the Jets for that. Charlie Huddy, I think, has done a really good job with some of the defensemen. Other defensemen haven't taken the next step. We talked about Bogosian regressing, but a guy like Jacob Trouba has come in. So for me, the coaches on the year are going to get a grade of C. And that has a lot to do with the way Paul Maurice has come in and really gotten more out of his players, instilled a harder work ethic, gotten this team to commit more defensively, because when Claude Noel was relieved, this team is really struggling. So I'm going to give the coaching staff, not just the head coaches, a C. As far as management goes, it's tough because the team didn't make any moves at the trade deadline, and it was tough to know if they were going to be in a playoff spot. But for me, you got to factor in everything that was done earlier on in the season. So I'm going to give the management a C as well. I would have liked to seen the Jets make some moves at the trade deadline, possibly getting rid of a guy like Devin Setoguchi, or bringing in someone to help them at that point when Mark Scheifele went down with an injury, and they really could have used an influx of offense. So I would have liked to have seen that. It was a tough year, but I think, you know, if these guys want to be back, I'm talking about some of the free agents and all that, I think that, you know, there is room for them, but I think that there will be more moves in the offseason. But coaches and management get a C.
You know, there's a lot of factors in this, obviously, because there's a split. It's almost like a split squad. You had Coach Noel for the first bit, and then you have Paul Maurice. So it's sometimes hard to remember what certain people did. You look at the power play. Team's power play is 25th. Overall in the league, they fell from 18th last year. They were 22nd in the first year. So, I mean, like, the power play hasn't really significantly improved, which is something obviously this team needs to do, is to be able to take advantage of a man advantage, which they seem unable to do. It's also a lot about, and Coach Noel used to use this a lot, it's the players that you have. You know, it's who do you have on the ice? Are you giving the coach the tools to be successful in this league? Or are you forcing them to kind of plug a bunch of guys in? I mean, I think there was a lot of plugging guys in above where they should be and trying to make them work. And again, we saw with Coach Maurice, him come in, But it happens a lot with coaching changes. The teams want to perform, so players step up their games. And we saw players playing for Coach Maurice that weren't playing for Coach Noel. And you could ask, you could say why, but the reality is that that's just it's the case. I mean, it's a fact story. And so, it's, you know, to me, it's hard to kind of grade them based on like in just that one sort of aspect of their game, right? If you look at the totality, I would say that the coaching staff overall would probably merit a C from me. And if you're going management, you know, it's hard because fans want to see the management make a move, and they want to see this team improve. And it's a very short term. And the problem is the management has been talking about having this long term vision.
You know, no other managers also talk long term.
Of course, everybody does.
Really weird.
But we're talking.
Nobody else wants to draft and develop. I think all the other teams, they don't want to draft or develop.
No, I realize that. But what I'm getting at is this, is that a management group cannot say to their fan base, we're not going to win. We're not committed to winning this year.
Colorado doesn't draft and develop. They just draft. They don't develop.
But Richie's obviously joking.
But
he's being tongue in cheek.
Really?
His tongue's obviously in your cheek. When is it not in your cheek?
Keep going, Dave.
But what I'm getting at is that you're not going to admit that you're not planning on winning because your fans have to be told that they're committed to winning now, even though the vision is that, regardless of whether you agree or disagree with it, the fact of the matter is that this group wants to win long term, and I think there's something to be said. If they didn't make any moves, maybe it was because they didn't think that with this group they were going to win this year. So why are you going to make those moves right away? So I would say that you could give the management a low grade, but I'm going to go with a C as well.
C for coaching for me. I think, you know, Noel obviously didn't do a lot of things, but Pomerace's record isn't that much better than Claude Noel, so you need to take that into account. And who knows what's happening with him if they're bringing him back. Management for me gets a C minus because, I mean, they just don't do much. You talk about the holes on defense. You give Grant Clipson that contract. You haven't addressed that issue. You haven't made a player for player NHL trade in 3 years. And every other team wants to draft and develop too. But at some point you have to make a move, because if you're going to blame the core of Atlanta, which you basically all resigned, and now they haven't actually gone out and blamed the core of Atlanta. But you hear, you know, this is this and this, and this is the reason why they're not succeeding. Well, you've signed a lot of them long term, so a move needs to be made at some point as far as I'm concerned. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. When we come back, Eastern Conference playoff preview.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, 2 hours to go on the Illegal Curve playoff preview show. We're going to start off in the Eastern Conference, as we've been talking about, with the Montreal Canadiens and Tampa Bay Lightning. I'm Richard Pollock, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and David Minuk. Habs Lightning.
We're not going to talk about the boss?
Well, the boss, we're working on a dream. I think that's a great theme for this playoff race.
He was inducted.
The East Street Band was inducted into the Hall of Fame. He's been inducted years ago.
Oh, was he? Okay. Along with little Nirvana.
Yeah. East Street Band, though, is overdue, as far as I'm concerned.
So Bruce was already in, and then
Bruce
just the
already
East Street
in,
Band. Okay.
The East Street Band got in this year.
Nobody's a bigger Bruce fan than Richie right here, if you didn't know that.
So, I think this song is a great theme for the playoffs. And let's talk about the Habs and the Lightning. Guys, we asked Kevin Allen just 2 segments ago if he thought the kind of collapse, almost epic collapse of the Habs last year against the Senators in the first round, where they lost their composure basically throughout the entire series, and then the Senators were victorious. If he thought that would have an effect on the Habs in this series, what do you guys think about that? Do you think that the Habs breakdown, I guess probably, you know, their mental focus last year was the biggest breakdown. Do you think that'll have an effect on how they fare against the Lightning in round one of the 2014 playoffs?
You know, I understood the point that Kevin was making, that there's a certain carryover, but because of the media. The media is asking the questions, but you have new players, and I really think the gold medal win for Carey Price is going to be a difference maker in terms of his confidence. I think he's going to go into that series knowing that he can win on the biggest stage, you know, in the world, really, and now in terms of having to win at the NHL level, I think he'll be able to do it. And I watched a number of Habs games this season, and you know, they've looked like a very good team. They've looked balanced, and they've looked determined. And I really think that, you know, this will be an interesting matchup. Especially, I mean, it'll be a lot different if Ben Bishop is not able to play in the playoffs.
Yeah, so Ben, just for listeners, if they don't know, I think they probably do, but Ben Bishop has an upper body injury, and we're unsure whether or not he will be back for the playoffs start on Wednesday.
Right. So, I mean, if you don't have Ben Bishop for the Lightning, that's going to be a difference maker, I think. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with that series. But I think that Montreal's not going to have any problems moving forward.
I'm going to ask you guys for your predictions at the end of the segment. Just some stats that I thought would be relevant about these two teams. The Tampa Bay Lightning are 8th in the NHL right now in goals per game. The Habs are 20th. Goals against, Tampa's 12th and the Habs are 10th. Okay? Tampa's actually a better 5-on-5 team, better on the power play, and worse on the penalty kill. So if you look at it in terms of some of these stats, you'd say, okay, maybe Tampa ought to be the favorite. And hey, guys, Tampa is the second seed right now in the division, and the Habs are the third seed.
Tampa Bay beat the Habs 3 or 4 times this year. We should mention that as well. 3 of the 4 games were one-goal games. So these games have been close, even though Tampa Bay's come out on the right side of these games. This is a tough series for me, Richie. You mentioned the offense there. Montreal Canadiens, everyone knows that Max Pacioretty's one goal away from 40. Mm-hmm. Hopefully he gets it, because if he was healthy the whole year, he'd easily get 40. He's been incredible. 3 hat tricks this year. The Montreal Canadiens, to me, are a team that has a lot to prove. I think Dave's point is well taken. And we know there's no issue in this room about Carey Price. Carey Price was phenomenal with his 2 shutouts in the Olympics. That is important. This was a big year for Carey Price. He had a lot to prove in the sense that he wasn't just given the number one goalie role, and he really had to step into that number one role that Luongo had. Mm-hmm. And I think that did really help him. And if you watch 24CH, Carey Price is a really light guy. His approach is a lot different than some other goaltenders, and he's fiery. If you get in his crease, he's not afraid to, you know, give you a whack. So to me, this series really is coming down to Montreal's ability to really take advantage of a situation. Tampa Bay, you mentioned Ben Bishop might not play. That means Anders Lindback will have to go in.
Well, we don't know that now.
Well, I'm just saying there's a possibility.
Didn't play last night.
That's true. That's what I'm saying. There's goaltending issues in Tampa, and to me, it's the ability of guys like Max Pacioretty, David Desharnais, who's had a good season, mm-hmm. to translate that into the season. The combined points for Brian Gionta. And Max Pacioretty in 4 games last year had no points. So if you look at their point totals last year, the combined point totals of Brian Gionta, David Desharnais, and Max Pacioretty, 2 points in that series. They had 2 points. You mentioned that, Richie. Their offense completely dried up against the Ottawa Senators, a team that was playing well defensively. But to me, if those guys, and these are big guys for this team, Plekanec is another guy for this team, and Galchenyuk is another guy we got to mention,
well,
too.
He's hurt.
Has injury problems. So to me, they got to be rolling out those two lines, and those two lines, it goes without saying that they have to contribute. But this Montreal Canadiens team, we talked a lot about it, but they're a good defensive team. And you mentioned the goals against, and they have a very good top 10 penalty kill as well. To me, the Montreal Canadiens are going to have to shut down a little guy by the name of Steven Stamkos, and they've got other players. The Tampa Bay Lightning, for the first time in a long time, have Lines and Andre Palat. I know Eric Duhatchek named him as one of his Calder finalists mm-hmm. this year. A guy that's quietly had 57 points. They have a lot of talented forwards on that team. They're not the best defensive team, and as we mentioned, the goaltending is a question mark right now. But to me, the Montreal Canadiens, I like them in this series.
Well, let's talk about a couple of matchup things. We're going to talk about injuries in a second. Matchups, okay? I assume you're going to see Thomas Plekanec matched up against Steven Stamkos' line all series. Do you guys agree with that?
Yep. Yeah, I think you're right.
I mean, he's a two-way center. He can shut down guys. If you remember the Habs when they beat the Caps and they beat the Penguins, who was he matching up against? Crosby and those guys all the time. So they matched him up. He took away his offensive game to play defense and did an admirable job. Now, what do you guys think about the youth of Tampa Bay up front, as he mentioned? Is that something that concerns you? And then also Tampa Bay's defense, I think, personally, fits in well with the way that the Habs play. Meaning, the Tampa Bay defense, Matt Carl, Brewer, these guys, for the most part, are pretty mobile. They may not be the most physical defense in the world, although Radko Gudas is pretty physical, but they're pretty mobile. And I think that plays pretty well into the Habs game, because the Habs are pretty mobile. So I think Tampa might have an advantage there in terms of being able to defend. What do you guys think about that?
I don't know. It's a young group, as you mentioned, Richie, and it is a group that has improved. They have improved as a group. And a guy that we haven't talked about a lot is Thomas Vanek, who since coming over in a trade has been a point-per-game player for the Montreal Canadiens. And you were even mentioning you were wondering if he re-signs there because we all assumed that he was going to sign in Minnesota or elsewhere. So to me, it's a tough matchup because the Canadiens really, let's be honest, especially Galchenyuk and Gallagher, have a bit of a sophomore slump here, injury aside. This is a team that is a little one-dimensional offensively. It is a line that gets most of their goals from a couple of lines here. And when you look at their defense, Radko Gudas, not a lot of playoff experience. Carl has obviously playoff experience with the Sharks and the Flyers. Hedman, a little bit of playoff experience. Brewer has the most. To me, I do have my concerns with their ability to defend. And I think the Montreal Canadiens have shown us that they can score goals in bunches, but they haven't had that consistent threat. And that's why they've been in the bottom 10 of the league in goals this year. So to me, I think you mentioned that it's a good matchup for you because the Habs are still small, Richie. They've tried and tried and tried to get bigger, and it's not just small.
Still small.
Not small in size.
They play small.
They just don't play big.
Yeah,
this is a skill team. You mentioned that the New York Rangers have become a flow team. So are the Habs.
Well, they are. I mean, it's a speed game from Tampa, too, though. I mean, Tyler Johnson, you're going to add Stamkos, all these guys. You know, they have a guy like Callahan gives them a different mix, but for the most part, you're going to be seeing not the most physical series. I mean, every playoff series is physical, but you're not going to be seeing the most physical series.
This might be the least physical.
It's going to be a puck-moving series, and it's going to come down to goaltending like they all do. And I think that's where, at the end of the day, if Bishop's healthy, we don't know if he is, then you might say coin flip. And I still think it's a very close series, but boy, Carey Price against question mark in Tampa is something, you know, whether it's a Latvian netminder that gave the Canadiens fits. Who played well yesterday.
Dudlevskis.
Yeah, who played well yesterday. I didn't want to even try and pronounce his name. Or Anders Lindback. I mean, there's questions there. There certainly is no assurance that you know what you're going to get. And that, I think, might even change the way that the forwards play and the defense plays in front of them. Now, guys, when we look at this series, and as you mentioned, you know, it's been a top-heavy production-wise. The Habs have been top-heavy production-wise from the patch-you're-ready line with Vanek. And Vanek, a left winger, playing the right wing, so sacrificing for the team in that respect. I think, personally, it's going to be that. I think Plekanec matches up against the Stamkos line, guys. So if Plekanec matches up against the Stamkos line, then guys like Killorn, guys like Callahan, they're going to be guys that I think need to be able to outscore the Vanek line. And I don't think they're going to be able to, which is why I'm going to give the Habs the edge in this series. And I've gone back and forth between six games and seven games. The Bishop injury makes me want to pick pick the Habs in six. And I realize they may not have home ice advantage, although there's going to be a lot of Montreal fans in Tampa Bay. Like, that's going to be, I bet you'll be 20% Habs fans.
I was thinking that exactly. I was thinking that this is going to be almost like a home game for the Montreal fans. We've seen that when they played in Tampa before, or whenever they go to South Florida, there's a lot of Montreal fans out there.
And there's just so much pressure on the Montreal Canadiens that sometimes I think it doesn't even hurt to start on the road.
Right, because the fans are so desperate for that kind of first win and the team kind of picks it up. The only thing I was thinking about with Tampa is that they have the core group has played together, and they played under Cooper at the AHL level and then again at the NHL level. So they have a certain kind of knowledge of each other. But again, they're a young team. I personally had the Habs winning in five. So that's
five.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because of the injury. I think if Bishop isn't injured, then you've got a 6-game series.
One quick question before I get your prediction. Do you think, I think they're likely going to go probably Subban and George's combo against Stamkos, but they may go Emelin and Markov. Do you have concerns with either of those pairings being able to handle Tampa offensively? I mean, defensively?
Well, when you talk about Stamkos, you're talking arguably the second best player in the world,
right?
So it's hard to always keep him off the score sheet. I don't. I think that this team, and we talked about Andrei Markov on the midweek show, UFA, we expect him to sign for one or two more years in Montreal. You know, he's still, even though he's not the defenseman that he once was, he's still an excellent defenseman. And Emelin has taken a while to get going here. But to me, this team...
Now, they didn't have Emelin last year, remember?
No, they didn't. And they broke up PK Subban and Markov. They only play them on the power play, which has really struggled. We talked to Pat Hickey about that. It really hasn't been impressive this year. It always was one of the top power plays. But I don't have issues, Richie. I think whether you put Subban and George's is, of course, a shot blocker extraordinaire. I don't. And, you know, I did mention that I'm picking the Habs. Dave has them in five. I'm going to take the Habs in seven. And I'm kind of with you, Richie, because of this goaltending issue. Ben Bishop has been terrific this year. And remember, we were talking about him possibly being on the U.S. Olympic team at one point. So to me, that really affects their chances. If Bishop is healthy, I have no hesitation. I still pick the Habs, but I might pick the Habs. I wouldn't be surprised. Again, I'm not going to give a cop-out answer here, but I'm going to take the Habs in seven. Wouldn't be surprised if Dave Minuk is right and it's Habs in five.
I'm actually in the middle, and I have the Habs in six because of the reasons we just mentioned. You look at a lot of the stats throughout the year, Tampa has the edge, but obviously the injury concerns are an issue. I think the Habs have learned from last year, and it's a lot harder to judge the Habs strictly on the stats when they didn't have Thomas Vanek for the majority of the season, and I think he's totally changed the way the team has looked.
Richie, they got him for this exact reason.
That's right.
They were having trouble scoring goals against the Senators last year, so they got a guy they knew was the best sniper on the market.
Next segment, we're going to break down the Rangers against Philly or Columbus, but we think it's going to be Philly, so we're going to break it down on that basis. Rangers-Philly, last time they played, 1997 playoffs, Philadelphia Flyers won in five games and then eventually lost to the Detroit Red Wings in the Stanley Cup Final. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Five segments down on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this Saturday morning, April 12th, 2014. Richard Pollock joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and David Minuk of IllegalCurve.com. Timmy Debenham, Michael Remus here as well. We're breaking down the Eastern Conference playoffs in what I think is going to be one of the best first rounds that we've seen in many, many years. And one of those series that I've kept my eye on, it's not official yet, but it looks as close to that as possible, is the New York Rangers against longtime rival, the Philadelphia Flyers. Guys, this series looks like it's going to be incredible. The atmosphere at Madison Square Garden and whatever the Philadelphia Flyers arena is named this year, I mean, it changes on a weekly basis. Is it First Union now? What's the difference? It's got a different
Niagara.
Niagara? First Niagara?
It's always the bank.
It's always, you know, they've
so
changed
boring.
Their name like 10 times, that arena.
Well, there's like five arenas now that are called Rogers Arena.
It should be the Philadelphia Spectrum.
Yep.
Anyhow.
And there should be no advertisements on the boards at all, and we should go back to the glow puck.
Well, that's the last time they played, I believe. They had the glow puck in the 1997 playoffs.
See, I'm segueing.
Very well done, Ezzy. Before we get to the breakdown, I want to go over some stats on these teams. Goals for Rangers, 15th overall in the NHL, so right in the middle. Philly's 11th. Goals against, so that's the big difference here, guys. The Rangers, 4th overall in the National Hockey League in goals against per game. Flyers, 19th. And then 5-on-5, Rangers are 10th overall in the league. Philadelphia is 17th. Power play, Rangers are 14th. Philly is 9th. So you'll see for the most part, guys, that the Rangers generally have the advantage stats-wise on a team basis heading into this series. And one important stat to note is how much more disciplined the Rangers are than the Flyers. The Flyers take the second most penalties in the National Hockey League, minors-wise, and the Rangers are in the top 10 of least penalties taken, so that's important. But what do you guys see as the storyline in this series?
It's a good question. I'm actually the most excited about this series, Richie. Maybe it goes back to the Legion of Doom and Gretz when he was a Ranger. These series were always great, always division rivals, so close geographically. I think, to me, the storyline about these two teams is that these two teams were doing awful early on in the season, and I stuck with both of these teams. I'm not tooting my own horn here, but the Philadelphia Flyers started 0-3 and it was 2-9 or whatever, and they have been have the best records since early January. But to me, it's about the Rangers and the fact that they've turned the season around and the Flyers have turned the season around, and these two teams have persevered here, and they have a good chance to upset one of the top teams. To me, the winner of this series has the best chance to upset the Boston Bruins. And the Boston Bruins are obviously the favorite at this point.
They're going to have to get through Pittsburgh or whoever else.
Right, in the next round, yeah. And we know that Philly has beaten Pittsburgh before, too. To me, this is a hard one. And you look at all the stats, Richie, and the season series was tied 2-2. And as far as the offensive stats and the defensive stats, clearly, New York, this is an offense versus defense matchup. The Rangers are a top five defensive team. The only category that the Flyers have the advantage on is in the power play.
There aren't really any injuries to take note of, Ezzy, right? Like, you look at McKenna, we think is going to be back. Kreider, well, that's maybe an issue. But aside from that, Grossman and Ronaldo are the only guys who there was some issue with.
Right.
Ronaldo's suspended.
Well,
right now.
You mentioned the penalties. Ronaldo has most of those penalties. He to me, he's a guy that shouldn't be back in the lineup just because you can't trust him. He does stupid things on the ice. So to me, this series really is going to come down to several things. We talked to Kevin Allen about it, the goaltending. Steve Mason, I don't have issues with, but this group of defensemen here with Braden Coburn, Kimmo Timonen plays a lot of minutes. They've brought in Andrew McDonald. He's quietly done a really good job on that second pair, blocks a lot of shots, and he's not fantastic offensively, but he's a guy that is really sound defensively. So to me, this really is going to again come to matchups, Richie. And you look at some of the top lines, the line that's been created with Marty St. Louis coming in with Derek Stepan and Rick Nash. That line has been dynamic, and for the Philadelphia Flyers, they're going to have an answer for that. And you know, the Flyers, after having big time struggles, as we've chronicled a lot on this show, that top line is back, and Claude Giroux and Jacob Voracek have done a great job. Now, I like the Flyers in this series. I'm kind of flip-flopping how many games. I have to think it goes to seven games. But to me, I think the New York Rangers, I think they're going to have trouble with the size of the Flyers. I really do.
Matchups, I think, are always the key. And quickly, before we get to the matchups, Michael Remus done a great job in the research-wise. The Philadelphia Arena is now called the Wells Fargo Center, but was the Wachovia Center before that, and the First Union Center before that, and the Core State Center before that.
The First Niagara is Buffalo.
That's right, but why did I say First Union? That's a long time ago. I remember the old play on words there with going to Philly, and yeah. Well, anyhow, let's matchups is, as he mentions, matchups, and I think it always comes down to that. You look at the number one line on the Philadelphia Flyers, Claude Giroux, Scotty Hartnell, Jakub Voracek, okay? And you say, okay, that's a pretty dynamic top line. But then you have your Ryan McDonough pairing, and that's, he might be, I think he's a top five National Hockey League defenseman, Ryan McDonough. So if you say he's able to play that team pretty well, you know, him and Girardi are able to play that team pretty well, that line, Ezzy, then I think it comes down to depth. And the Flyers just have four lines, really, that can score. And I don't know if the Rangers have that. You mentioned the Stepan St. Louis Nash line, but then you look at the other lines, and I don't know if they can score at the level that they need to. And that's where I get concerned. And I think the Rangers have the better defense. They have the better goaltending. We know that. But the Flyers have the better offense. And you know, if you go back to the general, you know, thought process of the playoffs, the better defense is probably going to be victorious. But such depth in Philadelphia, they have better depth on their defense with the addition of Andrew McDonald. I think the New York Rangers, and Mark Stahl is a great defenseman. Okay, I think he's really come around since the eye injury. He has more confidence now. But do Stahl and Strawman, even if they're able to shut down the Flyers' second line, for example, Braden Schenn, Wayne Simmonds, that would be basically their second line. But Cavalier's kind of been playing on the fourth line. And then you have Couturier and Reed and Downey on the third line. That's a tough...
That's a great third line.
And they'll be matched up against who? Talk about matchups. Who are they going to be matched up against? Couturier will be matched up against Derek Stepan, Rick yep. Nash, and St. Louis if that line stays together for the entire series. He shut down Malkin years ago. They use him in that role all the time. So then the question is, if they're able to dictate that matchup, and the Rangers are going to have almost home ice advantage, so they'll dictate matchups, at MSG. But I just wonder who shuts down then. You know, if the Flyers, if you're shutting down the Rangers' top line, who scores? And if you're shutting down the Flyers' top line, I think I still know who scores. There's more guys who can score. Dave, how do you see the series in terms of storylines? Like, is there one matchup that you think is going to be most important? I mean, is it going to be, you can go quite simple, and it might be the biggest matchup, Lundqvist against Mason?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, when you asked that question, that immediately popped into my head, was there's no question to me, it's the goaltending. And Kevin Allen alluded to it. He said Lundqvist has a losing record in the playoffs. So can he, but he's also, you know, similar to Carey Price, shown that he can win on the biggest stage. So, you know, I think Lundqvist has been playing, you know, fairly solid for this team. I think this team knows that they have to get it done. They don't have, you know, it's not like they're a youthful team. They're an older team. And so they really know that they need to kind of, this is kind of this year for them to kind of take it to that next level. They've been playing very well together of late. I think they're like 7-2-1 in their last 10 games, whereas the Flyers are a little, I think they're 3-5-2 in the last 10. And that doesn't always determine how you're going to go into the playoffs, but it can't hurt if you're going with a lot of positivity because your team is playing well. Now, of course, a team like Boston, for example, you know, they're resting their guys, so they're not necessarily, that's not necessarily indicative of who they are. But, you know, the Flyers have been struggling a little bit. However, having said that, love the Orange Crush. Well, you know, in terms of continuity.
But Orange Crush, play on words, the way how physical they are. Can the Rangers' bottom-pairing defensemen, or even their top-pairing defensemen, can they withstand the physicality of the Flyers in a seven-game series if it goes that long?
Well, you mentioned, the first line, and we know that you guys know Scotty Hartnell is one of my favorite players, and you throw in Claude Giroux and Jacob Voracek, they've got size and speed, and they can hit you, and then you throw in the second line, Braden Schenn, Wayne Simmonds, and whether they not, or they play Michael Raffles on there now. You mentioned LeCavalier. To me, LeCavalier is one of those. He's quietly had a decent season, been better in the second half of the season, but he's a guy to me that is kind of a little bit lost in where, because at the beginning of the year they wanted him to play second line center, and he wasn't playing that.
He's not good enough skater anymore.
And the third line, you've got Couturier there, who, as you mentioned, shut down Crosby last year, 2 years ago.
Malkin, yeah.
And Malkin. So you look at this team, and I do think that they can handle it, because the Rangers are a great team, second pairing there with Staal and John Moore, and as you mentioned, Girardi and McDonough are the top pair there. But if you look at who they're going to have to shut down, and then you look at the other line, Braden Schenn and Wayne Simmonds, that's a physical line, and they can score. Wayne Simmonds, seems to get 20 goals every year, and they're all in front of the net. He crashes and bangs, and this team works hard. And to me, there's a few concerns for me. The Rangers are going in hot. As Dave mentioned, the Flyers have only won 3 of their last 10 games. The Flyers have been a bad road team this year, just .500. And to me, though, I think that they're well-served to be in this underdog role. This is a team that was close to the bottom. No, they were at the bottom of the standings. Mm-hmm. They've inched their way up. They've got to a position where they're going to sixth, fifth in the Eastern Conference. And I think that they have less to prove and more to play for. And even though the Rangers are well-coached and they've done a nice job here, I like the Flyers in this series. I like the Flyers in 7.
That's interesting. And you look at what the Flyers might do matchup-wise. I think they're going to do 5-man unit, like with Couturier. And I wonder how they're going to do their defense pairings. Are they going to put Coburn and Thiemann in together? Are they going to put, how do they think a matchup will benefit them? Do they think that they should load up Thiemann in and Coburn because those are their two probably overall best defensemen? And then they'll take their chances with the other lines the Rangers have? Because the Rangers, is Brad Richards going to be the guy to beat the Flyers? I think that secondary scoring, Brad Richards, Carl Hagelin, guys like that, Derek Brassard are going to be the difference in the series, one way or another. They don't score, I don't think they win. They score, I think they have a pretty good chance of winning. So, as he has the Flyers, Dave, what do you have?
I'm going to go with goaltending. I think Lundqvist is the difference maker. I think he steps up and wins the series for the Rangers. I think the Rangers, it's very tough. This is a very close series, and I think it's going to be a brutally painful series for either team that gets out of it, but I think at the end it's Rangers in 7.
I have the Philadelphia Flyers because I think that they have the best forward in the series in Claude Giroux, and I think he's going to be difficult to stop. I think the matchups they're going to be able to, exploit in terms of Couturier against a top-heavy. The Flyers get a nice fit here because they have a checking line who can go against the other team's top line, and then the other lines on the team, I don't know if they can create enough offense. And the Flyers, as I mentioned earlier, they have a lot of ability to create offense. Vinny LeCavalier is right now playing on the fourth line.
Isn't it an interesting story, by the way, that St. Louis and LeCavalier are going to face each other? St. Louis hasn't really been very good since coming over from Tampa.
That's right.
8 points in 19 games.
And I think Brad Richards and Vinny LeCavalier, also Richards part of that team, Richards and LeCavalier both have foot speed issues. And I think LeCavalier might have an issue keeping up with the Rangers' pace, but Richards has kind of had an issue keeping up with his own team's pace.
His own pace.
Yeah, so I have the Flyers in 7. I think it goes to the rink. I think we're going to see a Game 7 in Madison Square Garden, and I think Claude Giroux and the Flyers are going to pull it out. When we come back, I can talk about playoffs all day, guys. It's these matchups, you could break them down any which way. Pittsburgh Penguins are going to face either the Columbus Blue Jackets or the Detroit Red Wings. We're going to give our take on both of those possibilities when we come back on the Allele Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Allele Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Allele Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.